an AppleViz original.
Hello there, and welcome to the AppleViz Extra podcast. My name is Dave Nason, and for the third month in a row, we are here to discuss an Apple event. Today, I'm joined by my AppleViz colleagues, Tyler Stephen and Ed Worrell. Guys, thanks for joining me. Welcome.
Hi.
And yeah, it's been a strange year, hasn't it? Three events in a row. I didn't get audio description on this one. Was that just me or was that you guys as well?
I got audio description.
I had to turn it on, yeah.
Okay, so something went wrong with my
app. In the TV app, I just went in and it worked as expected for me.
Yeah, this is the first time I've watched one from my computer, so I had to turn on the audio description from the language drop down or pop up in the TV app, but it seemed to work. I had to turn it on by myself, but
okay,
it seemed to be okay.
Okay, so something just went wrong with my machine. I'm glad to hear that because the audio description, it's pretty good quality.
Yeah, and also, just as a quick note, for audio descriptions, if you use TV on the Mac, you can go into System Preferences and Accessibility and Media Descriptions, and it should be there, an option, so it doesn't...
Cool.
Yeah.
I was on the Apple TV. So in September and October, it was all about watches and iPhones and HomePods. Today, Mac was center stage. You guys are really our team experts on Mac, I think it's fair to say, along with Alex. So it's great to have you guys on to talk about what's new, really. And the big thing is Apple Silicon. This was Apple's first introduction of Macs with Apple Silicon instead of Intel. And they introduced us to the new M1 chip. So a lot of people, there was speculation that it was going to be A14 or it was an A14D or something like that, some version of the A14. But instead, they're telling us it's a brand new chip. Tyler, could you tell us anything without maybe... We've got too far into the weeds, but high level, kind of, what's new about this chip? What are the highlights?
Well, there have been a lot of rumors that this was a variant of the A14, but at least from a marketing standpoint or a public-facing standpoint, it doesn't seem to be any references to that chip, but I would imagine that it is, and this is just speculation on my part, but I would imagine that it is a variant of the current chips that are used in the iPhone and iPad, especially considering the ability now to run apps made for iOS on macOS. Of course, no saying as of now as to how good that experience is or what that means, you know, for developers. But I would assume that would be, you know, very, very similar architectures across the board to really make that transition work.
Ed, what are the big advantages they're telling us? Like, why move to Apple Silicon?
Well, some of the big advantages that I understood on the keynote and just things I've read early on was improved battery life and the new Apple Silicon just takes a lot less power to run in general. So therefore, we should see a big performance in boost in theory. I mean, obviously we'll have to wait to see what happens when people actually start getting their hands on the devices, but it sounds like for the average consumer, it's going to be mostly about battery savings.
Yeah. They talked really, the two big words were power and efficiency, wasn't it? And power per watt was talked about. So four high performance cores and four efficiency cores. Is that right? In an 8-core chip?
Yes.
Yes, that's what it sounded like, yeah.
And then an 8-core GPU graphics as well. So, and it's a system on a chip. For those of us who don't really know the mechanics, could either you explain what's system on a chip versus what came before and should we care?
My understanding of a system on a chip is that it's all in one. It combines a lot of the components, the controllers, into one chip as part of the main CPU rather than having separate discrete components. At least that's a
And that helps with the efficiency from what I can...
Yeah, because if you're not having... Yeah, it's kind of like how the T2 before this, you know, Macs that include the T2 incorporate image signal processor, system management controller, hardware encryption, which apparently that's a new benefit of Apple Silicon, is file level encryption, and which is similar to how they do it on iOS, whereas encryption on Intel Macs, from what I understand, it's encryption of the drive, whereas this is a more block level. So I don't know what that means for like file vault or, you know, the configuration of managing like encryption keys. I don't know if anything changes there, but that'll be interesting to see. And I think another thing with Apple Silicon is if you compare iPhone and iPad updates to Mac updates over the past 10 years, you'll notice that Mac updates have been far more sporadic comparatively. And part of that has been due to the time it takes for Intel to release updates to their chips. And so Apple has over the years grown less and less patient with Intel and its delays.
They've been beholden
been the catalyst to really switch over. Hopefully there'll be a more regular schedule for, you know, keeping Macs, you know, on their game more consistently.
So we might actually start to see kind of like the iPhones and iPads, kind of a TikTok type update cycle of every other year, every year being a big update to the processor and stuff like that would be my guess. I don't know if that's completely accurate, but that seems to be what they were doing with the iOS devices for years. Yeah. Is integration or updates about every other year to brand new chips or processors. So it should be interesting to see what they do on the Mac end of things.
And it's at least in their control now, I guess, is the big thing, isn't it? Like you say, so they're not waiting on Intel. They can develop at their own pace.
Right, right. And one of the other advantages I see of Apple switching to their own silicon is the ability to run iPad and iPhone apps directly on the Mac now. To me, that's going to open up the world to not just like mobile gaming to the PC, but it's going to translate everything back and forth and should be a pretty cohesive experience, at least in theory.
How do you think? I'm guessing you guys have both tried out Catalyst apps, and I'm curious, kind of, is it going to be a very similar experience to those, or is it going to be different? How VoiceOver and a keyboard integration, how keyboard navigation is going to compare to, or will it be identical to using the iPad app with a keyboard, for example?
Currently, I've seen where a lot of apps have brought over their iPad apps, like the Twitter app is a great point on that one, where VoiceOver commands seem to work only about half the time. Okay. So we are seeing some issues with keyboard commands, or at least I am. I don't know if anybody else is, because I'm seeing where you don't have full keyboard accessibility sometimes in these apps that you can use a full keyboard, say like on the Twitter iPad app, but on the Mac app, it doesn't seem to translate the keyboard commands like it does on the iPad. So I'm not sure if it's just something I'm doing wrong, or if it's a known issue, or I'm not sure.
So yeah, I think part of that is also to an extent sort of in the developer's court to optimize it. And
sure.
Yeah. But that's what's interesting with these, is that the developer doesn't have to do a lot, or can literally any app from the App Store run on these new Macs? Is that the idea? Or does the developer still have to take an action to say, I want my iOS app to be on the Mac?
From what I've seen, because I've played around with Xcode a little bit and starting to learn some development on that side of things, it seems like you can just literally check a box, but I'm not that deep into it yet, into programming, but it seems like you can just say, I want to optimize it for all devices, and it kind of knows what you need to do and what it needs to do to make it work. But there again, I'm not really that deep into programming.
I'm not sure where I'm blurring the lines between an iOS or iPad app working on the Mac with the M1 chip versus a Catalyst app, you know what I mean? And are they
right.
yeah.
similar or different? Or how that's going to work.
Some of the things I've seen is if someone ports over their iPad app, it functions mostly the same from what I can tell. But I guess we'll just have to wait and see what developers actually can do with it. Because I know that support's much greater in Big Sur than it was in the previous OS. So we'll have to see what developers do with it.
Yeah. Well, like I say, it's potentially huge if pretty much all iOS apps could potentially be run on your Mac. To see how people will use those and how it'll be, for us with VoiceOver.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
I think some other cool advantages that come out, they talked a lot about battery power, which will matter to a lot of people, I'm sure. But even things just like that we don't even think about with our iPhones and iPads, which is that you press the power button and it wakes up instantly. Or, maybe apps launching that bit quicker. So I think that will be good. Do you reckon people will really notice that kind of difference in the Macs?
I think you will, because right now I've got a 2017 MacBook Pro and it still takes a good bit to start up the computer. So it'll be interesting to see how much faster it actually is in practice. Because to me, that's kind of a saving point to me. Is I get a little impatient when I start up my computer for the first time at work for the day, and you got to sit there and wait for it to boot. But kind of first world problems, I guess. But it's interesting to say the least. It's an interesting selling point to me.
Yeah. No, they sound cool. Should people then be at all concerned, like either they've just bought a Mac and they're worried about applications that come out in the future not working on it, or vice versa, is it too early to buy the new one if software isn't going to work that they need? Is there, or what have Apple told us about software?
My understanding is that software today, using Rosetta 2, you can run pretty much any app designed for an Intel Mac on an Apple Silicon based Mac. There are ways that developers can optimize their apps, like universal binaries. So they can take more native advantage of Apple Silicon performance and efficiency. But of course, it remains to be seen what developers do and how they take advantage of it. And of course, iOS and iPadOS apps, in the App Store, I assume those will be exclusive to Apple Silicon.
Yeah.
And as far as if you just got a Mac, say an early 2020 MacBook Air or something, those will continue to be supported. Apple is pretty good about maintaining software support, as far as updates go, updates to Mac OS, and that'll be a good number of years. I expect Intel Macs to remain supported, not become obsolete from a software standpoint. But I guess the only question would be then what developers do with their apps, and if there will remain to be, if there will eventually be a widening disparity between apps that work on exclusively on Apple Silicon and Intel based Macs.
Yeah. So hopefully it's the developers will continue to use that universal app option.
Yes.
Like I was looking at this because obviously Apple still got the 2000 or the 16 inch MacBook Pro and the iMacs and the Mac Pros that are still using Intel based chips, and they haven't updated those this year. So yeah, they're going to make the transition in a couple of years, but I'm guessing Apple's going to have to support those chipsets for probably, 5, 6, 7, 8 years into the future would be my guesstimation. Cause you just can't transfer and just cut everything off all at one time at the 2 year mark. I can't imagine they would do that, but it wouldn't go well.
Yeah, I agree. I think especially on the pro side, if you think, how long it may be before they even get their own chips into the likes of the Mac Pro And then there's the, yeah, like you say, pros. And if you think of a corporation or something that's using Macs, they could be on a 3, 4, 5 year replacement cycle. So yeah, I'd agree with you. I think they have to support them for some time. And really, it's just hoping that there are things like Universal and the Rosetta 2, which is the sort of thing that allows you to run apps on the other silicon and all that kind of stuff, that'll work as well as they claim it does, I suppose.
And I remember back when they started using Rosetta to transfer to the Intel side of, when they transferred to Intel's, what was that? Oh, that was probably
2006.
2006, okay. They were still using Rosetta on, I have my 2008 MacBook Pro 13. They were still using Rosetta from there. So I would imagine they'll still be using Rosetta 2, 3, 4, 5 years, like I said, down the road from here, just to support that legacy software. From anything they've said, it works beautifully. So we'll see how that ages into the future, I guess.
I think, yeah, that's the important thing is, I think people don't need to fear this switchover, hopefully. So I think that's, it's been well thought out and they're managing the transition. I think that's the key point. And yeah, hopefully it goes as well as they say it will, but.
That's the hope.
Now, they did introduce hardware, obviously, in the form of 3 new Macs. So there's the MacBook Air, which is a 13-inch. There's the 13-inch MacBook Pro. The 16-inch has not received an update yet. The 13-inch MacBook Pro has. And the Mac Mini, they're the 3 new devices. As far as I can tell, the laptops, that the MacBook Air and the MacBook Pro, are in the same, I guess, industrial design. Did I catch that right, or did you guys pick that
That's
up?
That's the way I understood it.
Yeah.
So, I think it's the same design.
Yeah, they definitely said it on the Pro one, I think. They said in the same enclosure or something to that effect. I didn't catch it on the Air, but I guess that's a case of maybe this chip is giving them X amount of extra power to efficiency, and they decided to put that into more battery power, essentially into more battery life, rather than into making the device smaller, which maybe they could have done. But I wouldn't be surprised in a year or two if we start seeing even thinner Macs.
Right. The one thing I wasn't clear on, though, is on the Pro models with the new chips, are they only using integrated graphics, or are they still using the, what was it, the AMD graphics?
I believe it is integrated, because I believe that, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think even the pre-existing 13-inch MacBook Pro had integrated graphics. I think it's only the 16-inch that has discrete, but okay. Please do correct me if I'm wrong on that.
I honestly don't know. That's why I was asking, because I've been configuring, helping a friend of mine configure a 16, and they were still, as of a week ago, using the AMD graphics and everything. So I'm guessing they probably won't be on the 13 then.
Yeah, I think in reality, the 16 is the real Pro. The 13 is the half Pro, kind of. You've got the Air and then
Pro Light.
The Pro Light, and then you've got the 16-inch is the real Pro machine, you know. I'm almost certain that there's only integrated graphics on the 13.
And interestingly, the only MacBook Pro that got an update today is the US dollar $1,299 and $1,499 sort of low-end ones. The high-end ones did not get an update today. Those are still running in. Those are the high-end 13-inch as well as 16-inch Pros. Did not get an update today. So those are still Intel. And the whole MacBook Air line got Apple Silicon. And I believe there is another Mac Mini. There is the updated Mac Mini, but there's also an Intel Mac Mini alongside it.
It's still available, is it?
It's still available. The Intel one is still available.
But the Air.
So I think they're trying to. Right? Yeah, okay. The Air is completely. From my reading between the lines after the event, I understand that the Air has been transitioned completely over to Apple Silicon, and the other ones have not.
Okay. Interesting. Now, is the Mac Mini, did they change the size of the Mac Mini casing, or is that still the same size? Because they weren't too clear on that one.
Yeah, they said like it's the smallest, you know, you can buy, you know, the usual kind of, they talked about, you know, the smallest Mac you can buy or the smallest computer. They said something like it's a lot more powerful and a lot smaller than any competitor. But I got the impression maybe it's a bit smaller, but I didn't get absolute clarity on that.
Right. That's what I was wondering, if they're more along the lines of like the Apple TV in size maybe now, or because the Mac Mini was quite a bit bigger than the Apple TV, because I got a friend that got one a couple of years ago, and it was, I mean, it's still a relatively small computer, don't get me wrong, but I was just wondering if they'd made it, you know, the casing small or not, because I didn't think they were too clear on that one, but...
Yeah, they kind of implied it is, but it wasn't, yeah, maybe it wasn't clear. And I think it's really interesting that, I'm not sure about the Pro, but certainly the MacBook Air has no fan in it, which is... And believe me, I have a 2020 MacBook Air and I hear that fan all the time. yeah, that's an interesting point. And is there any other kind of key points from the hardware that you guys want to call out?
No, not really, because to me, they really kind of kept it the same. And
yeah, I agree. It's kind of, there's not a huge amount different to say about the three machines. They're all kind of updates. They're kind of, in a sense, they're kind of regular yearly or every second year kind of updates, but they've just a massive change on the inside, I guess, with the new chip, of course. But in terms of the number of ports, I think it's pretty much the same as it was before.
I don't really see any big updates on the hardware side of things either. I mean, other than the obvious innards, like you said, it all seems relatively similar.
Yeah, and they both, not the Mini, of course, but the two laptops have Touch ID still. So I know some people may have been holding out hope for Face ID on the Mac line, but I guess they're going to be waiting another year anyway for that.
Yeah, and I did see somewhere, too, that, I mean, this doesn't make much of a difference to me, but what do they call it? The Face ID camera, or not Face ID, I'm drawing a blank now. The front-facing camera on the display is still 720p. Mm. It's not full 1080p at this point.
Yeah, they did talk up that the M1 chip is giving much better... I can't remember what the word is, but...
image signal processor.
Yeah, that one. Yes, so they're saying you'll get a better picture than you did on the... Because I know when the 2020 Air came out at the start of the year, there was... one of the biggest gripes that I saw from reviews was around that camera. So it'll be interesting to see how reviewers feel about it now on this one, with essentially the same camera, but a different chip doing the work.
It's interesting to me, the whole camera debacle with the generalized public, with that they're all focused on the big number, not on just how good the image quality is. It's, I don't know. It's interesting to me. I guess I don't use the camera for the image quality or anything, being completely blind, but I it's interesting that that's a sticking point to a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. And the prices, by the way, are coming in at, so the MacBook Air is staying at a starting price of $999. The Pro, MacBook Pro, comes in or starts at $1,299. And then the Mac Mini is $699 starting price. So I think they're the same as they were before, which is good. I guess the prices haven't gone up as a result of this anyway. The Mini looks very good value when you compare it to the... If you're happy not to have a laptop, I guess, if you're happy to have a static device or whatever, and it is very, very portable as well, the Mini is actually going to be a very good option for some people, isn't it?
I would think so, yeah.
What are you guys on at the moment?
I'm on a MacBook Pro is what I'm doing, but
okay.
I'm on a 2018 MacBook Air. Got it about 2 years ago. Obviously. yeah. So I mean, it's pretty good, but I gotta tell you, I'm enticed by this new MacBook Air, especially when they were saying, you know, as far as app performance, and I wonder, and this is, again, I can't speculate any further beyond this, but in terms of voiceover performance, because that's something where I feel like on iOS and iPadOS, voiceover is on balance snappier than it is on the Mac. Like, for example, the famous B word, busy.
Especially in Safari.
In Safari. And so I wonder if they could find ways, looking toward the future, if they could find ways to hardware accelerate that. I know that was one of, someone posted an opinion piece on the AppleVis website closer to WWDC a couple months ago. So that could be interesting, because if they could sort of bridge that gap a little bit between the Mac and iOS, they could have ramifications for accessibility.
It is very, very possible.
And you might see the accessibility software run smoother on this chip anyway, because Apple doesn't have to rely on Intel to give them the proper drivers and that to make it work. And they don't have to rely on that. So Apple's controlling the whole thing. So all in all, you might see accessibility, just the level of punchiness, or even just how it reacts to input, you might just see it increase in speed altogether.
Yeah, it makes sense, because they're saying things like Logic and iWork, and you know, their pro apps, they're saying, are much faster than they were in the Intel. So why wouldn't this other piece of Apple software we call VoiceOver be faster too?
Yeah. So the next time I can safely get into an Apple store or somewhere I can safely test one, I definitely want to look at a MacBook Air. I don't know if I'll necessarily buy one, because I'll have to see what people think and if there are any kind of teething problems in practice. But it does look interesting.
Yeah. As I was saying to you guys earlier, I updated to the, because I just had to get a new Mac at the start of this year because my previous one broke. But I there is a part of me wishing it had hung on for a few months out more, because it would have been cool to check out this new one. But I'm certainly very confident that whenever I do need another Mac in 3 or 4 years' time, that it will be one of, obviously, an Apple Silicon one. And I'm, so far anyway, I'm excited to see what it'll be able to do.
It'll be interesting to see how their processor actually, once you get real world benchmarks out there, how it compares to some of these Intel chips. That'll be really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. These guys are all available to order today, which was a bit surprising. We're used to them giving us a few days or something before a pre-order, but these guys, you can go onto apple.com straight away and order them. And they are shipping next week. So we'll be interested to hear in the comments if anyone has gone ahead and bought one, and to start getting some early reviews, hopefully, both out generally in the mainstream, but also within our community. It'll be really interesting to hear what people think of them. The other news we got today is that macOS Big Sur is launching this Thursday. So probably a good time to do a quick overview of what's new. And you both have been running Big Sur beta over the summer, so you've hopefully got a decent concept of what's new in Big Sur and what's changed. So Tyler, do you want to go first and give us what are the standout changes that we need to know about?
Well, one thing is they've changed, you'll hear a lot about the visual changes, but that doesn't really mean much to, I presume, our community. But the sounds have changed. For example, the sort of dong sound you get when you hit a key, that's changed. The Messages app has been revamped and brought in line with the Messages app on iOS and iPadOS. And what's interesting is throughout the operating system, VoiceOver now takes increased advantage of the Actions menu, which was originally introduced to macOS with the release of 10.9 Mavericks in 2013. but has been expanded so that now you'll get used to hearing that certain elements throughout the operating system have actions available. And you hit VO command space, and a lot of times, especially in apps ported from iOS and iPadOS, those will be the same actions, you know, on the Mac. So that could potentially help to make the experience more cohesive.
Okay. Ed, maybe you can answer this, but I fear not. What is the difference between that and the context menu that I would open with VO Shift M?
The way I've kind of seen it is the VO Shift M is more of a kind of a right mouse click action. So it kind of hides all some of those options in a context menu for like a mouse right click. From what I just learned today, the VO command spacebar for the actions is more similar to the actions rotor, if I'm understanding it correctly. Because I've been trying to figure out how to do that the whole beta, and I honestly should have just asked on Apple Vista to see if anybody knew. But that's about the big difference to me. I don't know if that's an accurate assessment or not, but that's what it seems like anyway.
Yeah, I think also on particularly Macs with like trackpads, like laptops, certain things can be done with, you know, swipes or hovers. And I think that's where the actions menu could be, you know, of use. Things that aren't put in a right click context could be compensated by through custom voiceover actions.
Okay.
So I guess, yeah, the context menu I was speaking about is the exact same menu that a visual user has if they right click, yes. Whereas the actions menu is specific to voiceover and can give voiceover options. Okay.
So the context menus are virtually unchanged in Big Sur. They work how they always have, at least from my experience. And another thing is with Big Sur, you get a control center, which you exit through the menu extras, you know, with VOM twice, and you can get a few more settings in there than what would be in the menu extras, but it's not a replacement of that feature. So you can both coexist. You can use each one as you see fit. And that's another thing where the actions menu really takes prominence, because just like on iOS, things can have custom controls where you can do more than just select and deselect something. So you can use the actions menu to show more controls with items in the control center, sort of further mirroring the experience.
Cool. So visually, people have been talking about how Big Sur looks a bit more iOS-y, and it sounds like both in function and maybe even in the sounds we hear, they've gone that direction as well. Are the sounds that you said are new, are they more iOS?
Yes. So like, for example, voiceover, like for voiceover sounds, for example, in macOS Catalina and earlier, if you hit a button, for example, the word press is spoken. Mm-hmm. In Big Sur, if you hit a button or any activate any element with VO space, it makes the sort of the iOS style the double tap sound or the click sound. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, very good.
I kind of thought that was a welcome improvement because I'm that's always annoyed me on macOS is I either have to have verbosity turned to low or I have to deal with like with the pressed or interacted and stuff like that. But to me, the sounds that voiceover plays now is a little bit more welcoming to me. I don't know.
Fresher.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's not that voiceover was bad or anything, but like you said, it was a little fresher and it just seems a little more modern now with the sound.
And I suppose as well, it helps bridge that gap a little bit for people, doesn't it? That if things are familiar across the different devices, it just makes it a more seamless experience being in the ecosystem.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And cool.
The one thing I've noticed about Big Sur too is this is one of the first macOS betas I've been on that it's been stable for voiceover users through the whole experience. I was on the Mavericks beta back when that was released, and it started out awful, but Mavericks was one of the better operating systems in my eyes where with voiceover accessibility, but I don't know. It seems to be really stable. So I don't think people should fear updating to it.
Very good. Would you agree, Tyler?
Yes, I would agree. Like I had some headaches last year, for example, in the Catalina beta. But this year it's been remarkably stable, at least from my experience.
I wonder if that has anything to do with now the both macOS and iOS are sharing the same Swift backend. I wonder if that has any positive changes to it because there a lot of the code base on the backside of the OSs are pretty much the same. So I wonder if that has a lot to do with how stable it's been.
Yeah, I wonder if Apple if that makes it easier for Apple to streamline, you know, their bug fixing and updating because if they can use some of the same code on both platforms, that could eliminate some of the development overhead and, you know, maybe provide for better fixes looking forward.
Absolutely. And I think the reason why there were so many issues with Catalina last year is they were still in the process of switching macOS over to Swift. And I think I read an article not too long ago that said macOS is now 100% Swift programmed. So that probably saved a lot of the problems, I would think.
It was the Apple file system thing as well, wasn't there?
Yeah.
That came a couple years earlier, the API with High Sierra, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
The APFS transition. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but it's good to hear that you guys are not suggesting people should fear the update because people all, you know, we see it with iOS every year that there's some, you know, you have to have a certain level of tolerance maybe to go with the original update where and yeah, that can happen very definitely on Mac as well, but so it's good to hear that this seems to be a fairly safe update and I think I'll go for it anyway on Thursday or Friday or Saturday. So yeah, very good. I think that kind of wraps us up. There was it was funny at the end. I thought we were going to get a one more thing within the one more thing, but we didn't.
Well, the only thing you got was the old school PC commercial at the end.
That was quite funny.
I was amused by that because I was back before I lost my eyesight. I remember those commercials quite well. Those always amused me.
Yeah, I didn't.
Yeah, memories. Wow. Yeah.
But no AirTags, no AirPod Studio. We'll have to wait a few more months for those. But
I'm waiting for those studios.
But hey ho, Apple have given us an awful lot in the last 3 months, so there's no shortage of stuff to spend your money on if you're so inclined. I think that's what I'm saying.
Three media events in 3 months. Yeah.
Incredible. So I think that does it. Thanks Ed and thanks Tyler for joining me again. Really appreciate it, and it's great to have all that information about the Mac, and thanks to everybody for listening, and see you next time. Bye bye.
This podcast has been brought to you by the community of Apple Viz. For the latest in resources and tips and tricks to help you get the best experience from your Apple device, visit us online at www.applevis.com.